Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. He had prior commitment as far as today in his job as director of the Hazleton Betty Ford Clinic. And I just want everybody to know that it's just it's a reminder to me of all the good works that he and his team does for our community. So I look forward to him being back with us next week. Now, for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to so many things that can make our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, Answers for the Family will address a variety of issues, such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And we will introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for you and your family. Now, our guest today is That and More, and he covers multiple areas of growth for all of us. And I believe that he's been a guest on this show as much or more than anyone. Al Colleen is the founder and president of Integrative Mastery Programs. He has spent the last 45 years studying the human condition and its application to life, relationships, and business through the perspectives of a broad spectrum of traditions. He currently coaches 42 top executives on effective leadership, management, and coaching strategies, and is in the top 3% of the world for individual business and life coaches. Now, Al is the author of Sole Proprietorship, 8 Critical Steps to Overcoming Problems in Business and in Life, which is a book that not only have I read, but I refer back to it from time to time, and it's available either by going to his website, which is www.8criticalsteps.com, or you can get it in paperback. It's in audio. It's in ebook format. It's out there, and I recommend it. Now, Al's upcoming book, 4 Levels of Identity, is based on the premise that humans are capable of achieving an advanced level of identity in all domains of their life. So, Al, welcome back to Answers for the Family.
Well, I'm honored to be here, Alan. As you know, I'm very supportive of the noble mission you're doing with this radio show and trying to help what I consider the most fundamental institution in humanity, the family. And certainly what you're doing here is spreading awareness and a lot of excellent support for people that are dealing with this primary institution that in many ways defines the quality of our life when it's over, and so, and along the way. So I'm honored to be with you and hoping that our discussion today can help somebody somewhere out there in radio land in terms of maybe shifting some approaches in the way that they see the experience of being a spouse, being a parent, being a child, being a sibling.
Well, I know that it will because it's already made a difference in me. So, I already know by having you on before and thank you for the kind words, because when I started this show, it's now been a little over 8 years ago. That was the goal. Was I looked at things and thought, you know, there isn't really enough information out there. And I was getting families that were calling me as an investigator, either to find their runaway child or to deal with some form of crisis in their life. And I saw that they really didn't know how to go to resources. You know, how do they get a hold of an educational consultant? You know, which books would be good books that can help them? And so that was sort of the purpose of it. So thank you for that. And that is the goal. And I hope that we are making a difference.
So, well, now, I'm sure you are.
So, you know, Al, first, you know, why don't you share with our listeners, you know, what is the Integrative Mastery and, you know, what type of programs does it provide to people?
Well, Integrative Mastery Programs is an organization I created 17 years ago after having had decades of business experience. I've been the CEO of four different organizations. And I noticed along the way that there was often a disconnect between the way people were operating when they were in their career and how they were operating at home with their families or in their best moments of life. And so I sought to create something that I couldn't find in my various leadership roles, which essentially provided a bridge between individual core values and the very best of us and how to operate in our roles in business, at church, if you're a church person, at the health club, in our families, in all domains of life. So integrative refers to the idea that the different tools that we provide actually help empower people in every area of their life. Mastery is, of course, what level they do that at, which I consider mastery the ability to practice with unconscious competence in a state of flow what is naturally most effective to any given situation. And then, you know, programs are different ways we do that. So we provide coaching, we provide different programs for organizations and individuals, on top of which I write books, and I do about 30 speeches a year in front of 500 CEOs for an organization called Vistage. I do spiritual retreats. I even marry people. So I develop very close relationships. Yeah, I've done four weddings. I did one Friday, as a matter of fact. So, you know, I basically try to engage in the process myself by realizing that, you know, two eye blinks ago, Alan, I was a handsome 20-year-old guy raising, sort of shaving the face of a young Robert Redford. And today, if you saw me, you'd see I look like, you know, an elderly Gene Hackman. I mean, it just happens that quickly, right? Life flows by quicker than we know. We always heard that we were young. We didn't believe them. It's true. And so I look at it as a process of empowered stewardship that we have an opportunity to practice in life, in all of our domains of life. And I think in that, we're going to determine how we assess how we spent these gifts that we call our lives.
Wow. That's beautiful. I love the way that you presented it. It took me a variety of places. You know, it took me to the mirror. It took me to conversations with my own father when I would sit down. We used to have lunch every Wednesday after I was an adult. And I would sit down and I would talk about, you know, my, you know, personal problems or successes and my business, again, problems or successes. And he used to tell me the same thing. You know, he said, you know, you need to understand that you think time is going by fast now, you know, wait till you get to be my age. Yeah. And I didn't get it until I got to be his age.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you know, I think there's a reason that explains that, in my estimate, that is the psychodynamic of time that is a relative measure. When we're 5 years old, a year is 20% of how long we've lived. When we're 64 years old, a year is obviously a much smaller percentage. So time has the feeling of actually speeding up as we get older, because each moment represents a smaller and smaller increment of percentage of our overall collective experience. And, you know, the blessing in that is that it can, if used properly, provide a foundation of wisdom and a fulcrum for gathering information that we can use to move along and get along in life. But I've decided that what we need to do is blend the larger universal spiritual truths available in basically all spiritual paths with psychological truths, with real life business and life strategies that help people feel like they're doing their best that they know to do at any given moment, and with a commitment to constantly growing that repertoire of tools that allows us in our final 5 minutes on our deathbed to be able to win that final conversation when we ask ourselves, how did I do? Did I waste it or did I spend it wisely? And my commitment, as I'm sure yours is, Alan, and those of folks in the audience, is, you know, we want to feel good about why we were here in the first place, and that we spent our time with a sense of legacy that actually makes the world a better place for the time that we spent in it. And what better place to do that, circling back to your, you know, sacred mission of of the family and the impact we can have on our children and on our spouses and even on our parents and our siblings.
Well, I got to tell you, when Jan told me that you had a new book coming out, I couldn't wait and told her, I said, well, you know, let's get him on the show as soon as possible. I don't care if it's before it comes out, after it comes out. So, you know, when I saw that she had you on the schedule, I was excited. So let's just start with, I mean, what are the four levels of identity? It seems as though you've created a new way for us to look at things, and I'm anxious to hear about it.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share. It's an idea I'm very excited about, and it's an idea that came to me in the course of my work. I have a lot of interface with a lot of people on virtually every life issue imaginable. While I'm technically a business coach, and I end up being the person that people can talk to about anything when they have nobody else they can talk to, and maybe they don't want to go see a therapist or they don't want to see this or that. I end up being that guy, and so I get this benefit of learning so much about the human condition as I study people, that what occurred to me years ago, but really I began to formalize with this notion of the four levels of identity, is that what really determines, at least as far as our influence, the outcome of our life more than anything else, of course, are our actions. Those actions come from our intentions, and our intentions come from our identity. And most people never really consider they have an option of identities. They feel like they are who they are. But where the idea first started formulating with the four levels of identity is that people that operate from the premise that I just am who I am are essentially rolling over or succumbing to the premise that their future is now going to be limited by their past, because who they are is simply a collection of experiences and their reactions to those experiences in their past. So what's that got to do with four levels of identity? Well, I bounced this off various mental health experts and whatnot, and they seem to all agree that this is true. So my premise is this, Alan. Imagine there are four levels of identity available in life to us as human beings. Mm-hmm. But that's the good news. Sadly, most people only get to level three. And the way I break the levels down are these. The first level of identity occurs from birth to about 3 months. And I call that level undifferentiated, disempowered self. So a newborn baby comes into this world and they don't really have a separate sense of self yet. They don't have an ego. They're basically just in a new paradigm. So they're undifferentiated. They're sort of part of the ocean of life. And they're disempowered because they're helpless little babies. So what happens at this phase of life in those first 3-4 months of life is they seek pleasure and try to avoid pain. And when they have pleasure, they sleep. And when they have pain, they cry. And then typically 3-4 months, they discover hands and feet, and they start rolling over, and they become aware of their body. Pediatricians watch for this as a developmental stage. And meanwhile, mom and dad are walking into the nursery making this noise toward you, Alan, Alan. And boom, it dawns on you that this sound must be me. And now the ego gets born, and we go into level two identity that lasts from about 3 months to puberty. And in level two identity, little Alan now goes into what I call compliant ego-based self. So in this childhood phase, prepubescent childhood phase, little Alan wants more pleasure, less pain. So he becomes compliant to find out what the world of not Alan, you know, parents, teachers, cops, cartoons, Walt Disney, school, putting your fingers on the stove, running in front of a car, whatever, learns what actions and consequences are, and basically learns what the rules of the road are to get more pleasure and less pain, and learns about karma, learns about as you sow, you'll reap, learns about consequences. And so we willingly in this phase listen to institutions of authority, parents, teachers, cops, cartoons, Walt Disney, what a good boy does, what the consequences are, what a bad boy does, what the consequences are. This is generally the stage when children are most refinable and most influenceable. And when we generally like being a parent most, because they're, you know, they generally follow what we ask them to do. But then we go into level three identity, which occurs at puberty. And at puberty, due to hormone flow, the sex drive awakening, and the drive for independence, well, first of all, level three identity lasts, in my estimate, from puberty to death for most people, unless they awaken level four. And sadly, most people don't. My mother died as the same insecure, neurotic teenager she was at 14 at 76 years of age. And because there's really not a whole hell of a lot of evolution of what we go through in the middle school crucible from who it is we are at 40, 50, 60 years old. We just get more sophisticated with how we practice it. And so I call this level non-compliant ego-based self from puberty to death or the awakening of level four. What happens in non-compliant ego-based self is now you have somebody who's now post-pubescent, who basically has a sex drive and has the desire for independence. And while I still love mom and dad and Walt Disney and cops, teachers, ministers, cartoons, whatever, I want to know what I think is true. And so two big things happen at level three in middle school, junior high school. We begin to live life outside the end, where we become very reactive to circumstances and people's opinions. This is the 2 hours spent in front of the mirror in the eighth grade worrying about the invisible pimple. We get hypersensitized to what our peers think of us, what our sexually attracted opposites think of us, what others think of us, as well as what the environment around us provides. And we tend to become almost passive reactors to outside the in sort of influences. That's one thing that happens. The other thing that happens that's quite insidious is we begin to build a trunk of evidence over in the corner against ourselves with our secret sins, our shames, our guilts. Those things we hope die with us, because if anybody opened that trunk, we wouldn't be loveworthy. And so we live our lives gathering rocks in that trunk of evidence against ourselves, weighing down our life by our past and our past mistakes, and basically reacting to outside environmental circumstances and other people's opinions. And it's an entirely appropriate, necessary phase in the teen years to provide the ability for the pear to drop away from the tree, maybe even into the 20s, maybe slightly into the 30s. But I believe that once we get into the 30s, head toward the 40s, not changing into our higher potential identity begins to create middle age crazy, begins to create substance abuse, divorces, lots of breakdowns and challenges, because that weight of our trunk gets so heavy. And we realize on a subconscious level, my future is just going to be an advanced version of my past unless something changes. And I find a great degree of people that end up feeling a sense of doomed destiny or isolation or whatever, that is that all there is, right? But fortunately, there's a level four. And I believe level four occurs whenever one is able to awaken it. And I've seen it happen in 18-year-olds, and it's really much more common to have it happen in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And I consider the fourth level of identity to be undifferentiated, empowered, values-based self. Undifferentiated because people that operate from level four, and I'll give you some examples, basically don't have such a clear-cut sense that it's just all about me. They begin to identify as being a part of something larger. It's sort of captured in the phrase from India, Namaste, that says, I honor that place in you, Alan, that's the same as in me. I honor the light in you. So people at four, at level four, operate with the premise that their, quote, self is bigger than just their body, their personality, and their history. It is actually an embodiment of values. And so that's what leads into the empowered values-based self. They become empowered because they begin to consciously personify and manifest values as their persona in their decisions, in their actions, in their identity. And when they do this, something quite magical happens. Instead of living life outside the end, they are now entrusted with, I believe, power by the, God, the universe, the source, whatever. They can now be trustworthy with power, because they're now going to be operating as an expression of values, not out of self-interest. And information comes to people at that level, power comes to people at that level, and they begin to live life inside out. They begin to be, in Hindu terms, a creator of worlds. The second thing that happens is the trunk of evidence gets pushed off the back of the boat, and whatever your mistakes were from the past, while you can learn from them, they no longer matter because they no longer define you, because you're now literally a new persona. So people that operate from level four are entrusted with power, and they can live lives of profound stewardship and inspired manifestations, career-wise, relationship-wise, etc. If for proof of this, when I have this conversation with various leaders around the country, I ask them to look at the high water marks of humanity, and I say, look, in the spiritual realm, we don't know that much about some of their personalities, but what values did Jesus Christ personify? Well, love, forgiveness, sacrifice. What about Buddha? Compassion, wisdom, mindfulness. What about Gandhi? Truthfulness, peacefulness, nonviolence. Mother Teresa, unconditional love for all, regardless of your station in life. Martin Luther King, equality for all, regardless of race. Those sorts of things. What about political figures? Battle for Britain, 1943. World War II going on. Biggest city in the world is London, 7 million people. 60% of them are down in the subways, because the Nazis have London on fire above you, and over a gravelly radio, a voice comes on that's Winston Churchill basically saying, 1,000 years from now, people will say this is the moment good fought back evil. Never, never, never give up. What's he talking about? Patriotism, courage, boldness. The high watermarks of humanity are people we've always held up. What about the people in your audience that are parents? When they're on their deathbed, what they're going to be thinking about are their children. That belies to me that for most people, the thing they love most in life are their children. And innately, therefore, how you act toward your children sort of begins to give an indicator of the possibility of level four. Most parents want their children to guide their decisions through their values, not their ego impulses. They want them to operate from level four, not three. They want the daughter out there in the car with the boy at 15 that feels tempted to have him take the bra off, say no, because her integrity and self-respect says no, even though I feel like it. That's how we know we've got a mature child that can be trusted with power and freedom. So my model is one that's possible to practice in all areas of life. And I found from my own life that when you do, you get to forgive yourself for the evidence you've gathered out of those past scripts you keep over in the trunk of evidence in the corner. What are your thoughts?
Which brings us to the question then, how does one create a fourth level of identity?
I believe that the simplest, easiest way to do it is to go through a process of looking over a list of values. And there's lots of them out there. You can go online and find them. You can find them in Peter Senge's book, The Fifth Discipline. You can find them. You can go to my website and send me an email and I'll send you a list of values. But you can find a list of values. It should be hundreds of them, and basically go through a process of distillation, where you look them all over, and if there are values missing, you write them on there, and then you pick the top 20 values that mean the most to you, and then you go back through a second time, and you take the top 10 of those 20 without feeling like you're leaving any behind. You're just taking the biggest 10. If a person has integrity and honor both in their list, they may decide, well, honor is a part of integrity, so I'm going to keep integrity. You keep the bigger 10. Then you do one final distillation process of taking the top three of those 10, and you ask yourself these three questions. What do I mean by, let's say, integrity? What do I mean by integrity? And you define it. Mm-hmm. Integrity is where your words and actions line up. Second thing you ask is, well, how would your life and the world be different if you practiced more integrity, if there were more integrity in the world and in your life? Well, I would be more honest with people. I would be more open. I would be more caring. I'd be more selfless, blah, blah, blah. Okay, good. Last question. Are you willing to commit to a life where integrity is paramount? Not perfect. You won't be it all the time, but paramount. And if you can say yes, and I encourage people to say yes, then you begin practicing modeling integrity at those critical moments where you realize you have a decision to make. And the reason this is such a personal model to me is, I think maybe on a previous show I was on with you, Alan, I might have shared the story of having overheard my son planning his suicide 9 years ago. And I had to go to my values and my level four to know what to do. And I believe that not only did it have me give up alcohol that day to try to model for him what was possible, but it had him get through the situation to where today he's a very successful, productive, happy young guy that might not be here had I operated from my level three rather than my level four.
Yeah, and I think you're touching on such an important thing when you talk about modeling. There are so many people that think that words are going to make the difference, that by just telling someone do as I say, not as I do, and not realizing, and especially at an early age, that the modeling part is so, so important. And in fact, I took it to a point in trying to make a difference when my sons were in primary school. And I want to say, I think they were in first and third at the time, first and third grade, when they had the you know, the assembly for everybody and the kids got to perform, we went through and we performed a rap where the kids came out and the kids that I was working with came out and they did a rap, but the rap was to the parents. And we used the music to Men in Black, but we rewrote the words, and the words were telling the parents to please understand that whatever it is that you model, that's what we're going to do. So if you tell us this, but you model that, guess which one we're going to do? But we wrote it into a rap so that these parents would understand at an early age how important that modeling was.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And that was really what I had to come face. The beauty of having a conscious level four is that it allows you to be more objective and honest in facing habits that you may have gotten into at an early age when you didn't know any better, perhaps, that you just haven't challenged. And yet now the impact those behaviors are having on people you love. In my case, with my oldest son, I realized that I was assuming that because I was the guy going out working hard and long and for decade after decade making money, my family would understand that that's my way of showing them that I love them. But what I didn't realize is that I was quietly giving myself license to do what my parents did, climb into the basement and take a 3-hour chemical vacation every night with alcohol in the name that I work so hard and I give so much to people and, you know, woe is me and I want to experience the euphoria and all that. But little did I realize, in addition to other problems it was creating health-wise, I was literally creating a script for my children to follow that now threatened to actually kill one of my children because he didn't have a sense of future and he thought that his answer was in doing the same thing I was doing. So while I couldn't guarantee the outcome, I damn sure knew that I had an obligation to model putting everything I could on the table to demonstrate my love for him in a new way by giving up alcohol and being willing to modify this sort of comfortable habit I had of self-medicating in the name of, I suppose, parental martyrdom or husbandly martyrdom or whatever. And, it wasn't a guarantee that he still might not have committed suicide or whatever, but I would have had to live with, and still will, whatever happens with my children. I can't necessarily guarantee what's going to happen with them, but I know I'm going to face a conversation with myself and, the universe, God, whatever, as to what was my role? Did I do my best? Was I a primary influencer that helped this child have a chance at finding a way for accepting life, even though it involves a fair degree of suffering, and to be able to put it into context in such a way that that child doesn't just begin to engage in self-destructive behavior, as so many children do today and probably always have, that we as parents have an obligation out of our stewardship on the planet to model the best of human activity and behaviors, not the most self-indulgent and often self-destructive.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing that story because I think it resonates with so many people out there. Now, I want everybody to stay with us. We're going to take a break. We will be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. And we're back. We're speaking with Al Killeen, who is the founder and president of Integrative Mastery Programs. We're talking about his new book, The Four Levels of Identity. Now, Al, we have a question coming in. And again, I want to thank everybody that takes the time. I know everybody can't listen at this particular time frame. So the people that take the time to send us an email or send us an instant message, we're going to do everything we can to be able to get these questions on. This one reads, my teenage daughter and her friends are great kids, but they seem to expect everything to be handed to them with little effort or involvement. As I am very involved in conscious living, I am looking for guidance on how to bring my daughter to what you term fourth level awareness. Can you explain how your book can help parents such as myself? And this is from Joan in Connecticut.
Thanks, Joan. What a wonderful question. And, you know, I think we begin to get into how to help our children access this in several ways. One of which is, well, the first is what we've discussed, which is to begin to model it yourself and to not just model it, but also talk about what you're doing and why you're doing it from your level four, from your values. I think too many parents want to put on a premise that they are, you know, they've got it all figured out. And yet, you know, kids are very sharp and they know when that's not the case. We're all too often hesitant, I think, to share the reality of the fact that we're still figuring it out. There's never a manual as to how to be a parent or what. I mean, there are manuals out there, but there isn't your personal manual as to how to do it. And so I think we need to model it. I think we need to talk about it. I think, you know, now, even when children are young, when they're 8, 9 years old, it's never too early to begin to talk to people about essentially the choice that you can do what's right out of your values or you can do what you feel like. But if you do what you feel like, it's likely to be based in your ego and based and likely to have consequences that may not be what you want it to be. But if you operate through the fulcrum of values, whether you're a religious person and you use the church to reinforce that, or you're not a religious person, it doesn't really matter. I believe values are the language of divinity on the planet. And so to talk to children about the fact that you're going to have choices to make, and if you make them through your values, through love, through doing what's right, through doing what's honorable, through compassion, through kindness, through gratitude, you're going to get different results than if you do what you feel like. And, you know, you don't need to believe me just because I say it. Try it. What are times in your life where you've operated one way and seen what happens, and then you've operated, you know, another way and seen what's happened? So give them examples of why it's in their interest. And at the same time, give them acknowledgement as to what they're doing that is already an example of their level four. In other words, your children basically have certain attributes that allow you to see that they're operating out of their values. When they do, the very best way to bring level four identity forward with children, and we often really don't do this with teenagers because they do so many things to annoy us, which is part of being a teenager, is to acknowledge, you know, honey, I got to tell you that, you know, the last week when you let that, you know, guy, that older guy walk in the door first, or when you gave that kid a bite out of your cake or whatever, you really showed a certain generosity that I notice you do a lot. You have a really good heart and you really do operate as an expression of love and kindness really so naturally. And it inspires me. But what's wrong with helping our children begin to get acknowledgement for when they do operate from their level four that they don't yet have a label for? They don't see it as level four. So I think that, I think working with resources such as Alan supports and that you can find out there that are counselors and whatnot that are values oriented. If you are a member of a church and they have counselors that come at it from a values-based perspective, it's all about creating awareness in children that you can't live their life for them. They get to live it. And if they want to have the best life possible, the greatest power to live that life is going to be when they make decisions through their values, not through their ego impulses, and have them test the theory for themselves. The ego impulse is going to feel best short term, but it's going to have the worst long term consequences 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, and one of the things that that we did when our kids were small, and fortunately they had the most incredible kindergarten teacher, and myself as a room dad, she introduced me to the concept of catch them doing something good, and that became her focus, and it was such a simple and yet powerful thing, to where if all of the kids are running around and everything else, and you know, and Johnny is over there, you know, pulling Betty's hair, and you know, Kathy's over there, you know, finger painting where she shouldn't be or whatever, but then you know. Little Barbara sits down when the teacher says, I want everybody to sit down and cross your legs in front of us. And little Barbara sits down and the others are running around. Her focus was not on the ones that were out there doing the things they shouldn't. She made a huge deal about, look at Barbara. I am so proud of Barbara. I asked everybody to sit down. She is already seated. Her legs are crossed. I am just so proud of this girl.
Yeah.
And it was just such a great concept that I think, you know, any of us can learn. But I have a question for you along these lines, because it's something that we get quite often. And we get it from parents who have, while their children were young, they, for lack of better term, spoiled them. But their answer to things were, but I wanted to give them the things that I didn't have. And I, you know, and I wanted to be their friend, and I wanted to be this. And they now see that they've become teenagers, and they're seeing how that has not worked. And it's now created a very difficult situation between them. The question that we get a lot is, how does a parent make that change to becoming someone who is now operating from a fourth level with that now teenager who's been spoiled for so many years? And as they went through their levels, they've learned a different reality.
That's a beautiful question. And I guess in my opinion, in my experience as a father, it's about really two things. It's about honesty. Well, three things: honesty, trust, and stewardship. Honesty in that our children are not stupid. And when they're teenagers, they're much smarter than we give them credit for. They're much more observant. They know more about us than we want them to know. And as a result, for us to be honest about our own lives, our own mistakes, our own bad decisions, our own consequences. And I've opened up the vault and told my children, my boys, I have two sons, everything that's happened in my life, good, bad, shameful, otherwise. And I know that has some parents recoil in horror. I do it because I realized that one of the things I frankly resented as a child was what I got to understand was pretense on the part of my parents of being sort of perfect all the time when I knew they weren't. And therefore, I stopped trusting what they had to say. The honesty that I have given my sons, I hope, essentially has them see, you know what, I'm still working through it. I do it for a living, and I'm still figuring it out. I'm not there yet. We all, by the way, oscillate between level 3 and 4, even after you awaken 4. You're going to drop back into ego behaviors. You were that for a lot longer time than you were 4. And so I own that, and I'm honest with my sons that this is what I do, and this is what happens when I do it. And worst of all, this is what I feel about myself when I do it, because I realize I sold myself short by operating from a lesser identity, a lesser intentionality. Stewardship matters because I think what level 4 does is it takes a viewpoint of parenthood in alignment with Khalil Gibran's conversations about children, that your children are not your children. They are life's longing for itself. Essentially, what your job is to be a steward of those children, to, even though they come through your bodies, they're not yours. They have their own lives to live. Your job, and my job as a parent, in my opinion, is to be a steward, an example of being the very best that I can be to help them have the benefit of my experiences and wisdom if they want it. If not, they have to learn experientially the hard way. And simultaneously, see that I'm doing it for some reason other than the biscuit of approval or acknowledgement from them, and that they won't be perfect in doing it, that they will have make mistakes like I did. But somehow we get into this gig as parents where we think that my kids want, you know, he needs to have what I didn't have. She needs to have what I didn't have. and I need them to turn out perfect because, boy, I sure remember my trunk evidence. Well, that's not the way it's built. All human beings are going to build the trunk of evidence and have problems. You're better off once you get into the adolescent years, in my mind, creating the third term, trust. And you do that by seeing your children, and this is big. I think this is part of the leadership role of stewardship, to see your children as the future they're capable of, as their true identity, rather than the past mistakes they've made. And we should do this with everyone, but it's very difficult and yet very important for parents to see their children as the future they're capable of, as their true identity, their actual identity, not who they have been. And when we do that, we naturally treat them as that future, and we're much more likely to help them get to that future.
And I completely agree. But the question then comes is that how does a parent deal with the fact that that they can see them in that future, but they know that the quickest way to get them to that future is to provide the guidance that that they believe that they need so that they don't go through the same pitfalls. They don't have the same issues that maybe held us back. How do we balance that?
You know, I had a situation with my oldest son when he was 13, and I learned something great from a very, very gifted counselor here in Boulder, Colorado, that was sort of a horse whisperer of teenagers, I guess I would call it. He somehow had the ability to get teenagers to trust him, and we'd had an interface with our kid now where we had some problems occur, and we asked him, you know, have you ever smoked pot? And he denied it. No, never. And yet we strongly suspected that wasn't true. We go to see this counselor, and the counselor says, can I see him alone for 5 minutes? Sure. Now, he's been lying to us for a month that he never smoked pot. So he goes in and spends 5 minutes with this guy, and the guy comes out and says, come on in. Cameron, what do you want to say to your parents? He said, I lied to you. I smoked pot. And we're like, wow, we're less amazed by the fact he smoked pot than the fact that the guy got him to tell him the truth. We said, how'd you do that? How'd you get your child to tell you? How'd you get him to tell you the truth? You've only known him for 5 minutes. He said, simple. I made it safe for him to tell me the truth. What too many parents do as teenagers, he explained, is they want to continue to relate to their children as they relate to them at level two when they were compliant ego-based self. But what teenagers need, he said, this was 200 years ago, through the sex drive and the drive for independence and all, you know, they'd be going down valley with each other and making babies at 13, 14, 15. Now we have them, we tell them they have to hold that at bay till they're in their 20s and married or whatever. But you know what? They have this strong drive to figure out who they are. And if you as a parent continue to try to treat them like you're their manager and then they better do what you say or else, they're going to tell you what you want to hear and you're going to lose the most important point of influence you have, which is their trust in hearing your opinion. So this guy's model was you've got to become a consultant to your teenage children. You have to, you know, I mean, now they do something overtly wrong. There's consequences, obviously. But basically what you want to do is make it safe for your children to share with you what they're going through and what choices they're considering. And then earn the right for them to ask you what your opinion is and then give them your opinion as to what the high road is and why to do it. But then within reason, you let them make the choice and they have the consequences. And in doing so, you prepare them for what life is like. And you know what? That was huge for me because I realized my kids don't trust me, and with good reason, because I've always been the guy telling them what they should be, even though I rarely was ever what I'm telling them they should be. I regularly violated those growing up, but I expect them somehow to not. Their mother, however, was not that way. She was always unconditionally loving, even in their dark moments, and didn't really jump in on them and jump on their neck and make them feel, you know, horrific and all that. And as a result, now as grown boys, they have an automatically closer and more trusting relationship with her than they do with me, because we get what we earn when it comes to our children's relationship.
Wow, it's powerful. Now, we have another message that is coming in, and I was just checking the time. We've got about 5 minutes. This one reads, I so enjoyed your last interview on Answers for the Family and bought your last book, which was terrific. When will your next book be released, and is it a continuation or companion to your interactive mastery work? And this is from Mary in Utah.
Well, I'm in the middle of writing it now, Mary, and so I hope to have it out by the beginning of the year. It'll be on Amazon like my other book is. And it is not a continuation. It is, however, very much a supportive read because, frankly, the way I'm living my life is to essentially try to share information that occurs to me that might help human beings out of a premise that I can never really feel like I'm alleviated from suffering until all human beings are alleviated from suffering. And so the four levels of identity is my attempt to explain how I look at things and how I work with clients and having them, you know, in the end, we're all going to have lives to the extent that we influence them based upon who we are. And so this Four Levels book, like my last book, will be one that gives people some tools and some power in seeing life differently, because I believe we're all miracle workers, but we just can't be trusted with the power of that unless we're operating from such a pure and noble values-based place that divinity, the universe, God, karma, fate, the source, whatever you want to call it, basically knows that what we're doing is helpful to the whole, not merely our own personal situation. So I'm grateful, Mary, you got the other book. This book I hope to have out in the next 3 or 4 months, and I believe that if you enjoyed the last one, you'll enjoy this one.
Now, Al, one of the things that I remember from one of your other visits on our show, and I really felt it was one of the most powerful things, and we got comments back from people. So share with our listeners your personal life vision.
Well, thank you for asking, Alan, because this personal life vision is what has created a world-class business. And frankly, I attribute it for saving my oldest son's life and mine by having us both stop drinking, because I dealt with a very scary situation of becoming aware of his threatened suicide when he was contemplating that he didn't know I was aware of. And I had a moment to make a decision as to what to do out of it. And had I operated out of my level 3, I don't believe he would be here today. And there's every likelihood I wouldn't be here today. But because I came at it from my level 4, he's now a very delightful, successful, brilliant young guy who's doing very well out in L.A. in the investment field. And, of course, I've been allowed, you know, to be around a bit longer to see if I can't do what I can do to help people find their way. So all of that out of this personal life vision. My personal life vision is this. It is a world where all people realize their fullest potential, a world of extraordinary relationships and a world of extraordinary accomplishments, and a world where integrity and honorable actions are courageously pursued and commonly experienced. But what's that mean? It means I want for everybody, not just me, but everybody, to realize their fullest potential, health-wise, spiritually, relationally, occupationally. I want everybody to be warm, safe, and dry, but then live lives beyond the mediocrity of mere survival and warm, safe, and dry. I want everyone to achieve self-actualization, Christ consciousness, enlightenment, whatever you call it. And I want to see a world where that the world is full of people like that, relating to each other and doing things together, and that we practice integrity and honor with courage consistently, even when we're not experiencing it back, because in the end, life is a mirror. And what we put out will come back to us as an overall, maybe not directly and immediately, but as an overall theme. So whatever we want from others, we must first give them.
Al, I love that. And I just hope that everybody continues to spread that. It's one of those things, and especially now, we all know that we're in a very strange political environment right now. And to be able to remind everybody how important it is to focus on helping all. If you focus on helping all, it will help us. So, Al, thank you so much for coming on. Please, once the book comes out, you're saying the first part of next year, would love to have you back. It is always so invigorating for me to have you on.
Well, you're very kind, Alan, and I really respect who you are and what you're doing with this work. I think it's important work. And in the end, as I say, I think we're all going to face that critical 5-minute conversation when our life ends. Was my life merely a pursuit of success, or did it have significance? And the way I assess significance is the impact that we have on others in lessening their suffering. kind of out of the bodhisattvic ideal in Buddhism. So I see what you're doing as incredibly noble work, and I can't imagine the number of people who you have helped relieve from various forms of suffering by the nobility of that work. And I believe we're all capable of that in our own way, and it all starts by creating a personal life vision grounded in values, and then living your life through a fulcrum of that personal life vision as though that's actually who you are, not the story of your experiences behind you that are how you learned to get to this place of your larger self. So I'm deeply honored to let me be on again today, Alan, and I hope somewhere out there in radio land, something we had to say today helps people move forward with a sense of passion and purpose and stewardship.
All right. And thank you. And for everybody out there, please be sure that you put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when our guests, Bob and Susan Karcher, will share with us their new book, Who Are the Joneses Anyway? So I've just started reading it, and I think it's going to be quite interesting. And if you've missed or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download a free copy of our Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And also, if you go to that archives, you will also find some of Al's previous shows if you want to learn a little bit more about his other books. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. Thank you for listening. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.